prepping for the LSAT, planning to apply to law school, Blueprint's Senna Maraflu, who aced the LSAT and teaches the LSAT, will share her top LSAT tips in this podcast. Please join us.
Welcome to Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. Your host is Accepted's founder and world-renowned admissions guru, Linda Abraham. At Accepted, our mission is to get you to that unforgettable moment when you read your acceptance email and shout, "Yes, I'm in!" Confident you'll be attending the perfect program to help you launch the career of your dreams.
The featured resource for today's show is the Law School Admissions Guide, 8 Tips for Success. It's a free download, and you can snag your copy at accepted.com/406download. Again, that's accepted.com/406download. Senna Maraflu, our guest today, has a very unusual background. She speaks 8 languages and is truly a citizen of the world. She moved to New York City to pursue a career in the arts, but somewhere along the way, she launched a career in international business as a sustainable coffee entrepreneur. She also considered law school and got bit by the LSAT bug. Having earned a 178 on that exam, she began to teach LSAT prep. She considers the LSAT like another language, completely teachable and completely learnable. Welcome to Admission Straight Talk, Senna.
Hi, thank you for having me.
My pleasure. How did you get involved with LSAT prep?
Well, kind of like you mentioned, I come from a career in the arts, primarily in dance. I moved to New York City at 17 to kind of pursue that career. And I ended up getting actually injured in dance, and I ended up being unable to dance. And so I was looking to do pretty much anything else. And I guess I explored quite a lot of things, and that LSAT ended up being anything else. And I ended up just falling in love with it.
Okay. That's a funny thing to fall in love with, especially coming from the arts. It's quite a contrast, all right? But okay. What do you think is the most important element or thing or piece of advice for prospective law school applicants to keep in mind when prepping for the LSAT?
People frequently ask me this question because I don't really have the most robust academic experience. I never really went to like elite impressive institutions or anything. And people always ask me how I earned such a high score. And I really think it's because I had such a positive and excited attitude throughout the whole thing. I think I always kind of kept the end goal in mind. And for me, the end goal wasn't like earning a perfect score or anything. It was because I genuinely wanted to go to law school. And I really wanted to kind of take that next step in my academic career. So whatever the case may be, if for some people it's being a certain kind of lawyer or solving a specific kind of issue that they really want to go to law school to solve, just kind of keeping that at the forefront of your mind as you're studying. And not really worrying so much about like the little mishaps along the way, just kind of acknowledging that they're going to happen. Lucky for me, I've failed many times in my life, so it's nothing that's like a shock to me. It never really brought me down too much, but I always did keep kind of the end goal in mind.
Your why.
Yeah.
My sister was all set to become a psychologist, mm-hmm. and then she did an internship at a clinic, a free clinic, and she really liked the legal aspects of the work that she was doing. And she decided to take the LSAT almost on a whim. And she got what was then a perfect score. It was an 800. This was years ago. It was at the time it was an 800, and she got an 800. And I think for her, part of what was confidence building, if you will, because her why actually wasn't that clear, was she had, whenever she had to take a standardized exam, she did just really well on it.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, and back when we were taking standardized exams, the common wisdom was you don't need test prep. So maybe you've got a book, that was all. And the classes existed, but it wasn't very common. It wasn't like today. You know, she just went in and took it. That was that. And then she decided to go to law school. By now she's retired, but that's what happened to her. But I think your point about your why is really important. In her case, it also was the fact that she had confidence in her ability to ace it. But your point is probably more relevant to a lot more people, because not many people walk in and ace these exams. Here's another kind of question. I think this is a question that law school applicants are increasingly facing, and that is more and more law schools are taking the GRE. So let's deal with the case where an applicant knows that the schools they are applying to are accepting both the GRE and the LSAT. Obviously, if a school you want to apply to doesn't take the GRE, I think that makes a question to you. But assuming that the law schools that the applicant wants to apply to accepts both the GRE and the LSAT, what should that applicant do? When should applicants take the LSAT and when should they take the GRE?
That's a really great question, because accepting the GRE is a relatively new thing in law school admissions. And shockingly, there actually are cases where taking the GRE is an appropriate step. So I guess a couple of things on that. The first is kind of acknowledging that if you want to apply to law school, you most likely are going to have to take the LSAT. And the reason for this is because, different from business school or medical school or most higher education programs, people applying to law school have very diverse majors. So people can be dance majors and apply to law school, or they could be science majors and apply to law school. And the LSAT really is the one and only standardized thing that everyone has. So it is very important, and schools take it, like they view it very, very important because of that reason. It's the only standardized thing. However, I think when the first kind of batch of schools set the precedent of accepting the GRE, and Harvard was one of them, there came kind of the question of, when is it appropriate? And to kind of answer that, I think looking at past trends of applicants that got accepted to pretty elite schools with the GRE shows that there's one thing that most of these applicants have in common, and that's having a really, really high GPA. If you have a very, very high GPA and a compelling story otherwise, taking the GRE is appropriate. And I think if applicants are deciding between these, first, make sure you have a high GPA, because that's kind of the only other number being involved in this calculation. And second, take practice LSATs. There are 90 practice LSATs available. So just kind of getting a good idea of how you're going to score on the LSAT and at least trying to improve on it, I think, is appropriate. But if you've taken a lot of LSATs and you realize that your LSAT score, maybe you just aren't getting it, which is pretty rare because the LSAT's a very learnable test. But if you just aren't getting it, and you already have a very, very elite GRE score, then I would say perhaps it's appropriate. And one other thing is students that we see getting accepted with the GRE are typically students that major in the hard sciences. So students that major with engineering and hard science degrees that maybe just kind of, similar to your sister perhaps, like on a whim decided to take the LSAT, and kind of perhaps it was like too late to study.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. I was also thinking about students going for dual degree programs.
Yeah, absolutely. And dual degree programs are actually, I think that I've seen kind of becoming more common. If I eventually go to law school, I kind of hope to do like an MBA program as well. So I think in those cases it is appropriate, but again, with the high GPA in mind.
Yeah, yes, for sure. For sure. And I think that's a great point. Basically the kind of applicant that they almost don't need a test score.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, if you're like an astronaut that's been to the moon, all you need is to say, I've been to the moon. And they're like, okay, so you do well on the LSAT.
That's a great analogy. Okay. How has the switch, first the digital LSAT, which was a change thoroughly planned for, and then to the Flex LSAT, which is remotely proctored and was created very hurriedly in response to COVID, changed test prep?
That is a great question, because it's actually changed a lot. I mean, maybe LSAC had some data that we don't have and knew that the pandemic was coming, because they released the digital LSATs in the fall of 2019. So September, September 2019 was the first fully digital LSAT, and July was like a pilot digital LSAT. So Blueprint actually has been the pioneer kind of in like the digital prep industry. We started offering kind of classes about 15 years ago that were completely online with an online interface. And then when the LSAT switched to being digital, people really, really freaked out. And it's primarily students that have been out of school for a while that freaked out about it, because the younger kids are like, of course, I've been on my iPad since I was 10. The kind of older, more experienced applicants were like, oh my gosh, what do I do? And it really revolutionized the LSAT, because in addition to learning the content, you also had to learn strategies to be able to take it kind of on a platform. And it's really, really important to kind of practice with that online platform so that you aren't surprised on test day. So for kind of making the switch for test prep companies, a lot of prep companies had to think about how to kind of integrate in our classic LSAT classes, where you have an instructor just kind of teaching the content, with students that are kind of also navigating a new digital, ever-changing because of the pandemic, platform. So what really happens is kind of a more interactive experience where both the instructor and the students are doing a lot of kind of back and forth talking. I know when I teach my classes, I'm a huge fan of like utilizing chats and like bringing students on mic and stuff to really have a dialogue going. Because especially with the digital LSAT, you kind of, different things are confusing for different people. So you kind of don't know what the most challenging aspect is for a certain student. So I guess I would say that it revolutionized test prep just because of the additional element of the learning curve of also being able to practice on a digital format as opposed to the super accessible paper format.
And what are some of the strategies that you employ? Let's say, I know you mentioned chat. I don't mean just in the instruction itself that you're using. I mean, what are some of the strategies that the applicants should be using for the test prep?
Absolutely. That's another really good question. So I took the exam on paper. It's strange because I'm now considered, I guess, like a dinosaur in the LSAT world. When digital LSAT came out, I really had to take a lot of practice LSATs online so that I felt confident giving my students kind of the proper strategies. And the one thing that I really learned from like taking a bunch of tests is that being able to navigate the platform truly is a personal experience. So it's my suggestion to everyone to listen, like look up any resources. I mean, if you just Google digital LSAT tips, like so many things show up, and really make sure that you're practicing the LSAT online and that you're trying out different things. But then once you find kind of a method that you think works, sticking with it and practicing enough. I can't stress the practicing enough. You don't want to do anything new on test day.
Right. I'm just thinking using any technology, right? Whether it's your, you know, your cell phone, your smartphone, if you change from an Android to an Apple, an Apple to an Android, there's an adjustment, right? You get a new computer, even if it's the same operating system. Yeah, you got to set things up. You got to make, you know, so I would think that, again, that sense of familiarity, or when you, you know, you start your car, it feels like an extension of you almost. But if you get a new car, the dashboard's all different.
Absolutely. And it's strange because kind of like you said, you have to get used to it. And there's this whole other layer actually with the digital LSATs of kind of how you can get disqualified during the digital LSAT. Like on the normal test, it was like, yeah, like don't cheat, don't bring like a resource. But on the digital LSAT, there are things that could be considered cheating, such as accidentally having somebody in your home walk past it. And I know, like, I live in New York City and many people live in very small, like, apartments, sometimes studios. So that's like very, like, impossible. And it's like, apparently your pet can walk into the room, but like another person can't. So if your dog is good at logic games, like, keep them around. But things like that.
Right. They bark at just the right time.
Yeah.
All right. So the LSAT has three sections, right? It has reading comprehension, analytical reasoning, and logical reasoning. What are some tips for the different sections, your top tips for the difference for each of those sections? And you can give us a great tip, I think, for the whole thing, but for the specific sections.
Lucky for everyone, I started out terrible on pretty much most of these sections. I had over a 30-point jump, so I have tons of
tips.
Wow. My best tips. Yeah. So most students, when they take their first diagnostic LSAT, one of the first sections that they feel confident about is the reading comprehension. It's very similar to reading comprehension on like an SAT or an ACT format, where you're being given like a passage and asked questions about it. And my number one tip for this is to read it differently than you read most passages, which is very difficult for people to learn. I'm an avid reader myself. I love reading, but the reading comprehension on the LSAT for some reason was the most difficult section for me to learn. And it's because I had to relearn how I read. Most of the time when you're reading something for pleasure, you kind of try to focus in on like the drama of it all, or you try to focus in on like what the big story is.
Right.
And in the reading comprehension on the LSAT, you have to care a little bit more about the logic. So you have to start caring about words such as and or words such as only, like really paying attention to how strongly or weakly worded it is. So I guess my number one tip is just really to read the passages for the logic rather than for the content, which is sometimes difficult because some of the passages are shockingly interesting, but read it more for the logic behind it rather than the content. So that's the reading comprehension. For the logical reasoning, it's where you're given like a very mini paragraph and then you're being asked to either imply something, like something that has to be true from that paragraph, or you're asked to like change the argument in some way. So strengthen it, weaken it, resolve a paradox, or you're being asked to kind of describe the argument in some way. So it's basically like you're doing one of three things to an argument. And my number one tip for all of those question types on logical reasoning is to like be very argumentative, be very skeptical. I think this was my best section to start because I love fighting with people. I think that is like my number one tip. Be very skeptical and look to tear apart arguments, even if you're not trying to weaken it or something, because it really helps you notice gaps in arguments. And the gaps in the logic and the gaps in the arguments end up being pretty much the most material part of the question and can help you find whatever answer you're looking for most of the time. Then for the analytical reasoning, this section is everybody's least favorite. And this really is a true new language. It's a test section that makes you recognize patterns and kind of, I guess, build scenarios and build onto patterns. And my number one tip for this section is practice, practice, practice. It is the most learnable section on the test. And like I said, there are 90 tests available. There are 4 games on every test. So there are like 360 logic games out there, and set a goal to do them all. If you do them all, then you will not be surprised on test day, and you should get this section down to perfect.
Okay, great. Oh, thank you. Can you give us, how long have you been teaching the LSAT at this point?
I've been teaching the LSAT for about a year and a half now.
Okay. Can you give us an example? Obviously, I know there are probably confidentiality limits here, but without violating that, can you give us an example of a student that you're particularly proud of?
That's actually a really good question. Oh, how do I choose? Okay. I'm going to choose one of my students. She was in an in-person class of mine, and she later did tutoring with me. And in the in-person class, I noticed that I think she was struggling in class and was really comparing herself to the people that were, I don't want to say the stars of the class, but the people that were speaking the most in the class. And I could tell that she was struggling. She wasn't finishing the sections on time. And I think it really was kind of like you mentioned, confidence. It was really a confidence issue. And she really beat herself down. And then she told me that she decided to not apply to law school. She didn't think she was going to get the test, et cetera. And then she reached out to me a little bit later, like maybe a few months later, when the pandemic hit, and we did kind of a couple sessions just advising, honestly, it's strange, mainly on like confidence and just confidence in selecting answer choices. And we really talked through the test, and she ended up improving so much. She went from like the 130s in her score to a high 160s score. Whoa. And that goes from not getting in places to getting in places with major scholarships. So
sure.
Yeah. And she's a much more confident person. I've noticed like when she speaks more sure in herself. And when she took the test, she just felt like more sure. I noticed like her attitude about the test was different. She's probably the student I'm most sure of. And I've so far heard that she got into one top 15 school so far. So it's just a great success story.
That is a wonderful success story. Thank you. That was great. I just heard today on the radio, I'm in Los Angeles. Los Angeles now has the most COVID cases of any county in the country. I've heard all kinds of terrible numbers on the radio and in the newspaper. I read them. This is a stressful time for all. As we're recording this, it's December 2020. Test takers on their own, without COVID, without pandemics, are stressed individuals. How do you advise test takers to manage nerves leading up to and during the exam?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think I myself get very like anxious when things that are important are coming up. And my number one tip is to really take time for yourself. Like part of your study routine should include time that you set aside and you tell yourself, this is my time that I'm going to do something good for myself. And whenever like one of my classes ends, I send students like a 10 things you should do other than studying, like for your study schedule, and really do things that you like. For me, I really love like reading a new book. So I'll like make it an effort to like find a new book of like a new genre or something and read a book. And some students love getting their nails done or doing their own nails because pandemic, or picking up a new hobby or something. So that's like my number one tip. And then the other thing is setting small goals along the way for the LSAT. Most people's goal is like the end score. And if they don't reach that, they just like beat themselves up and it's just like adds to the nerves because it's like you haven't reached that. So one thing that I always tell my students to do is set really small goals. So for example, like start with like, oh, I'm just going to finish the first 10 questions in the section and I'm going to get those ones right, or I'm going to get 9 out of 10 right. And small goals along the way. I'm not going to miss the word only if the word only appears. Small goals like that. And then rewarding yourself when you accomplish those things. You don't have to like go crazy with the rewards, but if it's just even like telling yourself like, wow, I did really, really well. And keeping track of those goals that you accomplished, I think is really, really great, because then it's like, oh, it's not just that you didn't reach that score. It's that you had so many accomplishments along the way, and maybe like the score you came close to at the end, but maybe you surpassed it. My original goal score was a 160 and I got a 178. So you never know.
Right. You ever read the book, Atomic Habits?
No, I have not, but I love new book recommendations. So I'll check it out.
I think it's really good. And it talks about setting small goals, developing habits. And I thought it was a very good book. So.
That's awesome. Yeah, for sure.
I think the author is James Clear. It's Atomic Habits. Yeah. Well, that was great advice, but thank you. Now, going back to the whole LSAT and GRE question, just to jump around a little bit here, what do you see in your crystal ball for the LSAT and the GRE vis-a-vis law school? Do you see waivers in law school applicants' future, as there are currently increasingly for B schools and to a limited extent for med schools?
Actually, this year with the pandemic, some law schools, I believe, not very many, but some of them did waive the LSAT requirements. I personally do not see the LSAT going away anytime soon or getting a waiver similar to medical school or business school, just because of a thing that I mentioned before, which is that law school, unlike any other grad schools, has students from such diverse backgrounds that the LSAT truly is like the one and only standardized thing. So I don't see it really going away anytime soon. And in fact, with the pandemic, I believe I'm allowed to disclose this. I think so. With the pandemic, like the LSAT has been administered online remotely from people's own computers. And the scores have actually been a little bit higher than scores normally are. And I think that makes applicants and schools both really, really happy, because schools see applicants with higher LSATs. Applicants are happy that they got higher LSATs. So I do not believe that the LSAT is going away anytime soon, simply because there would be no way to compare applicants against each other.
Business schools also do get applicants from an enormous variety of backgrounds. I mean, you have dancers applying to business school, doctors, lawyers, engineers, all kinds of people, and they love it, actually. And so, and until about 10, 15 years ago, the GMAT was the one common element that all had to do. And then the GRE entered, and even before the pandemic, some were asking for something called the executive assessment. And what I think I'm seeing with the waivers is it's kind of like the applicant that we were talking about a few minutes ago, where a school could admit that applicant without the LSAT. If waivers come to law school, I think that's what you're going to see, waivers for people where they don't need it.
Perhaps. And I mean, I do really sympathize with people who are just outstanding applicants and can't seem to crack the LSAT. And maybe in the future, but maybe like 15 years down the line. For now, it's strange. Applicants seem to be loving the LSAT more than like even schools, because this year, so in January of 2020, there were 16,000 people that registered for the LSAT. Now, for January 2021, there are 41,000 currently registered.
Whoa.
That's like a huge
increase. That is huge. That is huge. Well, I know law school application volume is up. I mean, that's well documented. I don't remember the exact percentage, but it was significant. It wasn't some small incremental increase. But I do think it's important for applicants to know that the waiver is really for those people who don't need the test to get in. And if you do need the test to get in, then you could score on the test also, right?
Absolutely. To show that,
yeah. So let's talk a little bit about Blueprint. There are a lot of test prep companies out there. There are a lot of LSAT prep companies out there. What makes Blueprint different?
Yeah, so I think what makes Blueprint different, just first, is kind of our philosophy towards teaching. We really want the teaching experience to be fun, kind of like what I mentioned earlier, so that you can set small goals along the way, and it isn't this like horrible thing that you just associate terrible thoughts with and something that you need to do. So we have instructors that really approach kind of edutainment, like fun kind of education. And what's great is that no one instructor is the same. Many prep companies have like a standard, almost script, and the instructors have to follow. But for our classes, every single instructor can kind of customize their classes in their own way. So I teach classes very differently than some of my other colleagues, et cetera. Our methods work, and we all teach our methods, but how we teach them and how we conduct our classes is very, very different. And I think that makes it a more personal experience, and it really allows the instructors to kind of customize the approach to fit each specific class. Classes can be very different. So it really, really helps. The other thing that really sets us apart is we understand that people learn very differently. So we have three different formats of classes. We have the online anytime course, which is really good for students that have a very, very busy schedule. So they can watch videos whenever they want. And then they have access to our online platforms, our review sessions, which are live, et cetera. And then the next kind of class we have is live online, where you still get access to like videos at any time. However, you have an instructor teaching to you live and is able to answer your questions live, and you kind of get that customized approach. And the last one is private tutoring, where you have a tutor that customizes your schedule for you the entire way, and you're able to kind of contact that tutor more one-on-one, really have like a discussion of what's working, not working for you personally, which I think really works. And then the other thing is most people that take our classes, I think, can attest to the fact that our online platform is great. I mean, I remember when I was becoming an instructor, I was just blown away by how customized it is. We have an AI program that customizes the questions that you get according to kind of the trends and how you're studying. And it really doesn't let you get away with things. If you've been like neglecting a question type, they throw it in your face and they're like, yeah, when you accomplish things, you still get kind of that positive feedback. And it really helps you kind of identify your strengths and your areas for improvement. And then the next thing is really just like the score increases. I think I've seen personally so far for like my private tutoring students an increase of like 17 points, and like most classes increase 11, but everybody's different. Like I improved over 30 points. I've had a couple students improve over 30 points. I think the personalized approach and really the fact that we can see what's working for each student really does lead to these gigantic, like over 10 point score increases over a limited time.
And what is the typical time that a student engages with Blueprint?
That's a good question. So our courses currently, we have a couple different course models. We have an accelerated program, which is a month and a half. We have a standard program, which is 2 to 3 months. That's a very typical time. And then we have an extended class, which is upwards of like 4 or 5 months. This is brand new. I think I'm teaching the first one right now. I guess by the time this podcast comes out, it'll be going. And then sometimes I've had tutoring students for 6 months. I think it just depends. I personally studied for 4 months.
Okay. If I'm a student of Blueprint, and let's take, I take the first option, which is the video only option, or even the second option where I guess it's some video and some independent study, and I'm studying and I'm struggling with a particular question or problem or whatever it is. Is there a way where I can ask a question and get help? Is there anything like that?
For the second option, which is live online, you're assigned a specific instructor, which is your instructor, and students are able to email me whenever. I love getting student emails. My students that email me the most are the ones that I see end up improving the most. Funny how that works. And then in addition to that, both students, so both live online and online anytime students, can do one of three things, I think, to get personalized approach. The first is to attend what's known as a review session. We have review sessions 6 days a week where an instructor is teaching to you live. It's like free LSAT prep, honestly. And they frequently do Q&As at the end, so you're able to ask any questions that way. The second way is there's like a little chat box that you can chat into, and it's actually real people. It's very funny. I remember when I was perusing the website before I became an instructor, I like saw the chat box. And then when I visited Blueprint for my instructor training, I saw that person's desk and I was like, you're real. It's very funny. And then the third way is we have two email accounts. One of them is like a study buddy and one of them is like a LSAT questions email address. And you can get personalized answers to any LSAT question or any just kind of like conceptual concern. And then in addition to just those things, on our online website, we have an explanation for every single released LSAT question ever. If you just kind of have a specific question about like a specific, I guess, question. But for more general concerns, we have real people that will make sure that you get an answer. And they'll be like in your face about it and follow up to make sure that you got it.
It takes like a day response, something like that.
Yeah, I'm required to get back to my students within 24 hours. I get back generally a little bit sooner.
All right, great. Now you alluded to, we touched on for a moment, the spike in law school application volume this year. And actually it's a spike in applicants as well as applications, according to LSAC. Do you think it makes sense? And I think you might've answered that question actually with your discussion about LSAT registrations. Do you think it makes any sense for law school applicants, especially younger law school applicants, to wait a year to apply in the hope that application volume declines?
The hard thing to face is that when there's a bigger applicant pool, it's going to be more competitive. Even if not every single applicant is competitive, there will be a more competitive applicant pool. And what we've noticed from the LSAT Flex is that people are just scoring higher, whether that's from being in your own home. I mean, as reference, I took my LSAT in the middle of Times Square when there was like a Model UN conference going on and people were in and out of the room, which is not ideal. Now people can take it at home, which is a much more pleasant experience, I imagine. And people, it's offered more time, so people can just study more and retake it more. So the end of the day thing is there's a more competitive applicant pool and better applicants. If you have the means to take another year off, I always suggest to do it. In that year off, especially for younger students, if you can improve your LSAT score even by 2 points, it just makes such a difference. And more than that, especially for younger applicants, getting experience in anything is just going to make you a better candidate. And I had applied to law school. I obviously chose not to go because I'm here right now. I had applied to law school straight out of college, and I was very young. I was like 21 at the time when I applied. And I noticed that even though I had a high LSAT score, and even though my grades are, like, if I apply now, my grades are going to be the same then, I genuinely believe I'm a stronger candidate now because I have so much like work experience and so much more maturity, which are both qualities that law schools can tell from your resume, from your writing, and will just make you a better asset to their class. And I think one thing for law applicants to remember and why taking time off is so important is that law schools generally aren't picking a class of future lawyers. They're not like, oh, this is going to be our next like DA and like whatever. They're picking a class of law students that are going to function together and work together. And in order to have the best graduating law school class, you want people that have experience working with other people or gaining new skills. So especially if you think that you can improve your competitiveness as an applicant, and if you can improve what you're going to get out of law school, which law schools can see, I always recommend taking some more time off, because there's really absolutely nothing you can lose. Because even if next year is also competitive, this year was too, and now you're just more competitive. So you're adding to kind of what a great applicant pool it is.
Great answer. Thank you. Makes sense to me. I know that law schools, and this is a change that I've seen, law schools increasingly are preferring applicants with work experience at least 1 year. Not as much as the business schools where it's more like 4 to 5 years. But, you know, law schools definitely are, that's a change over the last 10, 20 years. What would you have liked me to ask you that I haven't asked?
Maybe, what kinds of students do I see improve the most? Maybe, because I think that's a question that
good question.
Yeah. A lot of people, especially my students that attended more elite institutions, maybe they went to like an Ivy or something for their undergrad, just expect to get a great score on the LSAT because they've been an achiever their whole life. And then they see in class, it was more so when I had like my classroom courses, I'd have students from like Columbia and students from like the local, just normal like community college. And sometimes the ones from the community college would improve more. And the students that were from Columbia were like, why is this happening? Like, I've been an achiever my whole life. Why can't I get the LSAT? And I think it just comes down to how focused they are on not just the LSAT, but on like improving themselves to be prepared for law school. It's not that you can sit down and study for the LSAT for 8 hours a day. Those aren't the students that improve the most. It's the students that set aside their time to study. They do study, but then focus on also bettering themselves just so they have this more positive attitude towards the test. And the students that I see improve the most, again, like aren't the students that study the most. It's not that they don't study at all, but they're the students with the best attitude towards it. And the students that really utilize talking to their peers the most, the students that create study groups and make it a collaborative experience, much like law school and the career of law, right? No case has like one attorney assigned to it. And really just kind of treating it like a step that is exciting and that's leading you to the next chapter. And they'll talk to me and they'll be focused on other aspects of their kind of application. So just kind of, I think, having a positive attitude and really knowing that you can do this and then being proud of yourself along the way. The students that beat themselves up just throughout the entire process, I don't think end up reaching their potential.
Beating yourself up isn't a great way to proceed, but thank you for the question. Thank you for the answer, Senna. Thank you so much for joining me today. Where can Accepta's listeners learn more about Blueprint's LSAT test prep? And is there a way, if they want to work specifically with you, where they can contact you?
Yay, absolutely. Okay, so if you want to reach Blueprint, you can go to blueprintprep.com. So that's B-L-U, print, P-R-I-N-T, prep, PREP.com. And you can check out all of our different class resources. And if you have a specific law school in mind and want to know what score you want us to help you achieve, you can check out what's known as our law school compass on our website, where you can put in your grades and find what score you want us to help you reach. And if you want to work with me directly, which would be super exciting, you can peruse our live courses and see if I happen to be teaching one, or you can request me as a tutor. Or if you would like to email me directly, I always give out my email. You can email me at Senna, S-E-N-A, dot Mariflu, M-A-R-U-F-L-U, at blueprintprep.com. And I would be delighted to answer your email.
Great. Senna, thanks again. We'll include links in the show notes at accepta.com/406 to the resources that you just mentioned, including your email address. Listener, thank you too for joining Senna Mariflu and me for our
406th
episode. I'd like to just give you a quick reminder. You can grab your free copy of the Law School Admissions Guide, 8 Tips for Success. That's Accepta's informative free guide for law school applicants at accepta.com/406 download. Again, that's accepta.com/406 download. And a final request. If you found this show worthwhile, please share the good word by leaving a review on iTunes. Your doing so helps us spread the news about Admissions Straight Talk. The easiest way to leave the review is to go to lovethepodcast.com/AST as an Admissions Straight Talk. Again, that URL is lovethepodcast.com/AST, and you can leave a review there for iTunes, Stitcher, and other leading podcast sites. Thanks again for coming. This is Admissions Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.